if you're familiar with my videos by now, you'll probably have noticed that much of what I talk about falls into one of these three categories. You know, I talk about business and freedom, I talk about health and fitness, and I talk about mindset, happiness, and I often talk about how these things interrelate and how all three of them are key. But there are differences between them in terms of like how much our culture values the pursuit of each one, or how much individuals value the pursuit of each one, and also how obvious the presence of one is. If you walk around and you're in great shape, you know, it's obvious. If you've got loads of money, you can keep it a secret, or you can be ostentatious with it. With the mind, it is not necessarily so obvious, unless you know what you're looking for or what to spot in someone else. And also with the mind, we have to pay attention to the fact that a developed mind and a healthy mindset, a enjoyable, fulfilled state of mind, is ultimately what we all want, whether we admit it or not. It is both the ends, it is what we're trying to achieve, and it's also, here's the irony, often the means of getting there as well. So fitness helps, health helps, having money can help to a point, having freedom definitely helps. These are about setting the environmental factors to make those conducive to a healthy mindset. Physicality is almost like an internal form of stimulus towards that, but mindset is actually the final goal. All we ever experience is what goes on in our heads. It's our consciousness. All we ever enjoy is, you know, neurotransmitters, serotonin, dopamine, etc. And so why is it often the most overlooked? There's an irony in this, and that it is often what we want is so much closer than we think. And yet it's the thing we most often fail to focus on. And the topic of this video is, why meditate? You know, where does this even come in? Because again, to draw an analogy, people often don't start a fitness program until they feel like they've got to a point where the pain of not being fit is so much that it's like a springboard, and they bounce off it and they go, right, okay, I've really got to do something about this. And suddenly they reach a new tipping point, they enter a new pattern, they've had that pattern break, they move, and they make things happen. And before you know it, they've made that progress towards a new status quo. And suddenly they're like that, you know, super fit person who just goes from being really overweight to being like, you know, the fit one that everyone goes to for health and diet and training advice, right? So unless you've actually got a perceived reason to, it's unlikely someone's going to make a change to the point where they think, right, I've got to meditate daily. You know, it's like anything, unless you never really make a decision unless you fully appreciate the benefits and the pain of staying where you are and the benefits of making a change. Why is meditation even a thing? You know, what is it? It really comes down to this, the human brain. Human brain is the most complex object in the known universe. And it's very different from every other animal brain that we know. But there's a key, we are still animals. We are animals, and yet the brain varies in a very significant way, that we have this thing called the cortex and the gray matter that sort of surrounds our brain, and the neofrontal cortex, which is really all about rational decision making. It's how we really think and make decisions, you know, plan the future and try and anticipate the way things are going to go and put ourselves in other people's shoes and that kind of thing. So it's the logical, rational side of the brain, which we use to, we have this incredible ability that no other animal has, which is to override the other aspects of our brain to an extent, sometimes, if we want to, if we're able to, if we train ourselves to. And we all do this to varying extents. But animals, by contrast, are kind of like just very complex biological machinery. It's kind of like, you know, no disrespect to the animals out there, but they're running almost purely on instinct. You know, they're running off the sort of homeostasis aspect, the old reptilian brain, which knows when it's hot and when it's cold and has these reflexive reactions, and then a more mammalian brain, which relies also on emotion, has emotional responses, but they have very limited equivalent to what we've got. I mean, primates have, you know, a bit of this. I'm no expert, by the way, but this is the kind of core difference. And yet we often live, unless we have any reason not to, we often still nonetheless live in a fairly automated sort of structure a lot of the time. A lot of people are in some sense going around almost purely on what these other processes are guiding them to do. Seeking pleasure, recalling from pain, and using the logical side to solve problems, perhaps within their day job and that kind of thing. But ultimately the driver, the animal, is often still in control. And we can all relate to, it almost sounds like unnecessary to even say this, but we can all relate to being in a situation where we're completely being governed by the monkey mind. You know, the chimp is in control. And it's a limbic reaction. You know, we're feeling something, and it's not sometimes until afterwards we reflect on it where we actually go, oh, I probably shouldn't have done that. But guess what? We then go and do it again and again and again. And, you know, we repeat this whole process. And point I'm also making is that we spend so much of our lives in a trance that we don't actually realize that there are multiple facets of the brain in operation here. Often one of them is in control and not the other one. And so we do things that actually aren't in our best interest. They feel good at the time because we're so sort of at the beck and call of that part of the brain. That's just how we're born, you know. It's only normal, it's only natural. But we forget that there is this overarching layer sometimes. And this sort of ties into another idea, which I'll probably need to do an entire video on, if not an entire series, which is storylines that we tell ourselves. You know, we often buy into our storylines. And I truly believe that, had a call come in, had to cancel that. So I was just saying that 99% of our pain and suffering often is largely down to storylines we tell ourselves in our own head that actually bear no resemblance to the actuality, the reality of what's actually going on. Because we're not really so aware of what's going on, perhaps now or in the future, or what the past means, because we're so wrapped up in these storylines. And again, unless you stepped out of the storylines, there's no reason to even realize that that's actually what's going on. And so just like in fitness, you know, until you've had that stimulus, there's no reason to kind of train it. And even less so mentally, because it's just not as obvious. You know, having a good body is like, you know, it's like men's health cover model, women's health cover model kind of thing. It's just obvious. It hits you right in the face. It like smacks your limbic system right in the bullseye. Look at my body. You know, we all have this kind of instinctual admiration, maybe desire, maybe jealousy, what we see. And it's not the same with the mind. We don't necessarily go around admiring people who have strong minds and effective control of their mind. And we don't necessarily admire the experience or envy the experience they're having, the experience of being comfortable almost whatever comes their way, you know, having a greater strength in terms of the kind of mental stimulus and life stimulus and negativity and positivity that they're able to handle without going off the rails and letting other things take over. And if that's a positive emotion, you know, they experience it more fully because they're able to keep themselves in check and not let their emotions run away with themselves. They'll just sit there and really fully experience it. And if it's a negative emotion, they're able to let it go and realize that it just is what it is. There's no more to it than that. They don't buy into it. They don't tell some stories. They don't worry about what might happen and focus purely on the most unrealistic scenario. Although they may cater for it, they will see it as it is, you know, as that unrealistic scenario that it is, and not let their mind start then looking for signs that that is in fact the reality when it's not. And so there's no sort of obvious way the limbic mind can really relate to it. You know, there's nothing to be envious of. There's nothing to really aspire to when it's just not something it knows. So I think this is why that a lot of people don't have breakthroughs of various sorts, or like spiritual discoveries. They maybe take up a religion following a traumatic event, or they're just not interested in that whole side of their consciousness, unless they've got a stimulus, unless they've found solace in something like that, or they've gone through a really, really bad time, like just unbearably bad, and it might have been short and sharp and traumatic, or might have dragged on, and it got to the point where it almost kind of, that thing almost kind of burned itself out. You know, there's only so much of that negativity you can hold. There's only so long you can hold it for. After a while, the mind just sort of goes, you know what, like, I guess I'm kind of all right, you know? Like, I mean, that really sucked, but hey, I'm still here. And, you know, like, why was I so torn up about all that? It's like, oh my God, like, wow, eureka moment. Suddenly I just think, like, nothing really makes any sense anymore. It's like, nothing really matters anymore. Like Mark Twain said, I'm an old man and I've known many great troubles, but most of them never happened. And suddenly in that moment, they can have that stimulus, that state of awareness that serves as an anchor and in some sense a benchmark going forward. And then it might fade away again momentarily, and then over time, but that is the stimulus, then practice, because this is not magic in the sense that this is not like, once you've had it, it stays with you. This is something that acts as a reference point, a window into showing you the truth, which you then have to practice to tame that other part of the brain that's always trying to seize control, as it will, as it should. It's what's got us here. It's the animal mind, very effective at survival, but not so applicable now. Thank God we've got this other part of the brain, this neocortex, right, to show us the truth, and let us figure out the truth, or at least make our best shot at that. So awareness, you know, meditation is a form of practicing awareness, real awareness, not just an obsession over what's going on in the busy, chaotic survival brain, but a recognition of what's actually happening now, and also what's meaningful, what's not, what's relevant, not tying crazy survival related meanings to things that don't actually have necessarily any meaning at all. So you see, the practice of mindfulness is really about increasing your rationality and actually seeing things as they are, not assigning unsubstantiated storylines or even mystical assertions to things that for which we have no evidence. It's actually a massive misconception around spirituality and mindfulness, right? So that's why awareness is a big deal. So meditation increases your awareness. So what? You know, I mean, that's why. And this is also why it's not necessarily something that will have any perceived value, perhaps necessarily to most people, unless they've had that stimulus or had something they've gone through, or some reason, or some awareness of that state prior to beginning their practice. And then it is just a case of practice. So that's in a nutshell why we meditate, and that is also why it's quite hard to pitch the idea of meditation to most people, because it's like pitching the idea of a workout plan to someone who doesn't want to lose any weight. Like, it's just you know, it's pretty unefficacious, if that's the word. And it's something that people discover in their own time, basically, if and when they need to. So there you go. That's my thoughts on that. And I hope that was useful, guys. I hope it provides new context for any practice you might be embarking on. Maybe it even makes you want to think about starting or getting back into it again. I shall chat to you tomorrow. Cheers. Bye.